And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana University basketball news and discussion. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Podcast on the Brink is a joint production of the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. For complete coverage of IU basketball, visit assemblycall.com and insidethehall.com.
He's going to be sacked again. T-Gray Scales got to him. And Westbrook is there! He makes the catch! And he puts the cherry on top of the whipped cream as Indiana's going to win here this afternoon with 49 seconds to go.
Get your Indiana football tickets now and be at beautiful Memorial Stadium as the Hoosiers take on the Georgia Southern Eagles this Saturday. And as always, youth tickets are just $10. Breakthrough. Go IU!
On this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink, we are joined by Teddy Greenstein, who covers the Northwestern Wildcats for the Chicago Tribune. And Teddy gives us some insight into how the Wildcats will handle the year after they finally make their first NCAA tournament appearance, and how this year was actually always supposed to be the year, and they arrived a year early. We also talk about Bryant McIntosh, what to expect from his senior year, and the impact that Chris Collins has had, and much more. I was actually unable to make this recording, so it's just Alex and Teddy, but a great discussion about Northwestern as we continue our trip around the Big Ten right now on Podcast on the Brink. Hey, real quick, a word about this week's sponsor, SeatGeek. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there is a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events because with SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There really is nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have SeatGeek on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way that I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and like I just mentioned, with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats to anything that I want to go to. I actually used SeatGeek to buy tickets earlier this year to see Yogi play here in Dallas. I bought my wife concert tickets for the summer. So SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. They save you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. Now, here's how to get an even better deal, which is Podcast on the Brink listeners get $20 off of your first SeatGeek purchase. Download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K today, and you'll get $20 back from SeatGeek. That's promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K. And now, on with this week's episode of Podcast on the Brink.
And we're pleased to be joined on this episode of Podcast on the Brink by Teddy Greenstein of the Chicago Tribune. He covers some golf, college football, as well as college basketball. He is a jack of all trades for the Tribune. Welcome to the show, Teddy.
Alex, thanks, man. I love the name of the podcast, On the Brink. I think about Season on the Brink by John Feinstein, and that was one of my inspirations for becoming a sports writer. I wish we all got the same access now that he got to Bob Knight for that book, but we move on, and we do the best we can with our access, and we talk about this great game of college basketball that we love.
Absolutely. So last season for you had to be pretty exciting, you know, from a writer's perspective. From the standpoint of you've covered a lot of Northwestern basketball over the years, covered a lot of bad basketball, and last year was different from the standpoint of you got to cover the NCAA tournament. Northwestern finally got there. Can you maybe walk us through what it was like from your perspective covering the team, and also what it meant for Northwestern fans to finally break through and get a chance to watch a team that played in the postseason game that was meaningful?
Yeah, Alex, it was an amazing ride, to say the least. Now, keep in mind, I went to Northwestern, was there in the early 90s, and my freshman year, the team went 0-18 in the Big Ten. Point guard of that team was Pat Baldwin, who was an assistant coach with last year's team, and now a head coach at Milwaukee. So he and I, you know, could really look at each other and relate to just how long it had been and how much bad basketball had been played over the years and coached by guys like Kevin O'Neill and Bill Foster and Ricky Birdsong. But, you know, Chris Collins comes in a few years ago, and I think everybody felt, okay, this could be different. You know, this is the perfect guy because, you know, he had such great success as a player at Duke, as an assistant coach at Duke, from the Chicago area, gets it. You know, he's not going to try to get, you know, bad kids or guys who can't hack it academically into school. So this is our chance. And, you know, last year was not supposed to be the year. This was supposed to be the year in terms of when the talent would be peaking, when guys like Bryant McIntosh would be a senior and Vic Law and Scotty Lindsey would be later in their careers. But things started to go well last year, and things were looking really up in January and February. And then people thought Northwestern was cursed again because Scotty Lindsey goes down with mono. I mean, how many guys get mono these days? So he goes out, and then it's really a struggle as the season's going on. And then there's that Michigan game at home, and if Northwestern loses that, they're squarely on the bubble. And instead, the game ends with Nate Taphorn firing at about 90 feet and Derek Pardon making the catch, hitting the long layup. And then it was just this complete pressure release. At that point, it was pretty much assured that Northwestern was going to be in. They go to D.C., upset Maryland in the first round of the NCAA in the Big Ten tournament, and then have a couple stirring games in the NCAAs, beat Vandy, and have a great comeback in the second round against Gonzaga. Gonzaga has a kid who puts his hand through the hoop, doesn't get called. Mm-hmm. Collins gets a technical. Northwestern ends up losing. But it was a spectacular run. It felt very much like the Rose Bowl in the 95 season. Northwestern loses the Rose Bowl to USC, but didn't take away much from what was an amazing season.
It's interesting. You mentioned that last year really wasn't supposed to be the year. This year was for them to get to the tournament. How has that changed? How has last year's success changed expectations around the team coming into this season? Is there, you know, obviously they went to the second round last year. They were an 8 seed. Is there expectation for more? And, you know, how do you kind of balance that? You know, if you're someone that follows Northwestern basketball, you know, that not having been to a tournament, then all of a sudden you go to the tournament. Is it really fair to expect more this coming season?
Yeah, you got to. I mean, you know, that's certainly all of our human nature. Okay, what's next? What do you got? Got to advance, got to make the Sweet 16. But you know, when you look at this roster, it's absolutely realistic. I mean, I've seen where national guys are picking Northwestern first, second, or third in the Big Ten. So, you know, look at who Northwestern lost. Two very good players, Nate Taphorn, who is a three-point shooting specialist, and Sanjay Lumpkin, who is, you know, a really good glue guy, set the screens, rebounded, blocked shots, but, you know, scored only 4 or 5 points a game. So they're out, and then you got coming in a freshman named Anthony Gaines, who's supposedly a terrific defender, and two guys who can potentially score really well. A kid named Rapola Stevenauskas, who missed last season because of an injury, and Aaron Falzone, who is a really good three-point shooter, missed all of last year with a knee injury as well. And then you got, look who's coming back, Bryant McIntosh, Vic Law, Scotty Lindsey, Derek Pardon, and several other players. So, you know, if they can avoid injury, if they can have good chemistry, if they can avoid, I guess, getting, you know, cocky and full of themselves, absolutely. This is a team that people expect will be ranked all year, and you got to expect and hope as a Northwestern fan that, you know, you won't be sweating it out on Selection Sunday. This could be a solid 4, 5, 6 seed.
The one name that you brought up there that Indiana fans, their ears will pop up immediately, was Bryant McIntosh, who I've known Bryant going back to his freshman year of high school. I've known his dad. You know, he kind of grew up following Indiana. The offer from Indiana never came. Northwestern brings them there, and now he's going into his senior year. He's had a terrific career. How have you seen Bryant grow over these 4 years? And is he Northwestern's most important player coming into the season?
He's absolutely their most important player. Obviously, they have guys who are better NBA prospects in Vic Law and Scotty Lindsey, but it all starts with BMAC, and he started slow last season and then was really, really good when they, you know, when they needed December, January, February. Other guys faded out. Vic Law, you know, had a brutal stretch. Lindsey, as I mentioned, was hurt, but Brian was always there, and he's really the perfect college, you know, point guard type guy for Chris Collins. Assist guy, you know, Northwestern ran a campaign last year about BMAC dropping dimes because I think he's the all-time leader in assists and then scores a lot, you know, good three-point shooter, and then ridiculously good attitude and all that. You know, the first time he went back to Bloomington was a complete nightmare of a game for him, and I know it really hurt him. Since then, it's been better. And it's just, yeah, it's one of those guys where I always wonder, man, if Tom Crean had gotten him on, you know, I think Bryant would have been starting for Indiana last year and that team would have ended up differently. But he got to Northwestern. Chris Collins handed him the ball from day one. And that'll, of course, be the case this year in his senior season.
Yeah, you mentioned Scotty Lindsey and Vic Law. And to me, just kind of as someone that follows the Big Ten pretty closely, but more of a casual observer, obviously, of Northwestern. But to me, kind of the difference now in Northwestern as opposed to maybe the Bill Carmody years is, you know, Chris Collins has gotten in some guys, like you mentioned, like Lindsey and Law. Those are the kind of athletes, wing players that maybe they didn't have under Carmody. Would you agree with that assessment? And those two guys, how have you seen them kind of evolve as their careers have moved on? You mentioned Lindsey last year was out with mono, and I think that really set them back right as the season went along.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, I mean, let's credit Bill Carmody. Bill Carmody had a really good run at Northwestern. You know, he went from taking teams that would go 3-15 in the Big Ten to, you know, NIT teams.
Yeah.
And nobody likes to be in the NIT, but, you know, being in the NIT is a lot better than being completely irrelevant. And he got some good players. You know, there's the point guard Juice Thompson and Drew Crawford, Danny Crawford's son, the famous NBA ref. John Cherno was excellent, and every year there was just something. You know, there was just a couple close losses that would pop in. I mean, one year they lost to Michigan twice in overtime. If they win one of those games, they're probably in. If they win both, they're definitely in. Cherno had a bad injury his senior year. They were close, but, you know, Vic Law is a kid who would not have come to Northwestern if Bill Carmody had still been there because the style of play didn't really suit him. And Chris is a maniacal recruiter. You know, Scotty Lindsey broke his leg, I think, as a junior in high school, so school's backed off him, but he's certainly a top 100 talent. And Derek Pardon's a kid from, you know, the Cleveland suburbs who the big schools weren't that interested in because he's a 6'7", 6'8 center. So Chris has found these guys, and, you know, the roster is strong top to bottom.
You mentioned Derek Pardon. The one guy I'm interested in watching kind of develop this year is Barrett Benson, who is a name also that Indiana fans are familiar with because he was recruited a little bit under Tom Crean. And last year, you know, he showed some flashes of being a solid Big Ten player. But to me, he's a guy that could make a pretty sizable leap forward as a sophomore, maybe carve out a bigger role. Is that kind of how the staff's looking at it with him going into the season?
100%. I mean, he is, you know, goes into it as a backup to Derek Pardon. You know, he's probably a seventh, eighth, ninth man, but yeah, he's not shy. And he is a big time kid with great size, really looks the part. I mean, probably a full 6'11 in athletic and has a pretty sweet stroke. And I'm looking at it last year, you know, only averaged 8 minutes a game. And that really speaks less about him and more about the team that they only needed him for 8 minutes a game, but could certainly see him taking a bit of a leap this year. And then, you know, beyond that, maybe there's a way to get him on the floor with Pardon if they want a bigger lineup. Mm-hmm. Benson is pretty smooth. We'll definitely be hearing about him. I mean, he shot, didn't play a lot last year, shot 59%. Pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, he gives them, I think, maybe a different dimension with more of a, you know, obviously Pardon's a guy who can post up a little bit, but Benson more of a true back to the basket player. So I'm interested to see him. The other thing I'm kind of interested to see with Northwestern is this weird dynamic where Welsh Ryan Arena is not going to be used this year because it's going undergoing major renovations. How is that going to affect Northwestern's home crowds for Big Ten games? Is there going to be a major drop off in attendance, or are fans still going to kind of make the trip over to Allstate to see this team just because based on the success of last year?
Yeah, Alex, we're all wondering that. You know, it's funny, when that announcement was made, many of us figured, oh, classic Northwestern. They're finally going to make the tournament, and it's not going to be at Welsh Ryan Arena. And then, of course, they beat that projection by a year. You know, it's not a great gym. It's a very generic place, Allstate Arena, and DePaul used to play there, and they'd get about 3,000 people, and the atmosphere stunk. So Northwestern, some of these guys are saying that the crowds are going to be good. I mean, here's the thing. Getting to Evanston is not easy for a lot of people. Parking situation is bad. So if you live in the, you know, in the western suburbs or northwestern suburbs now, you're saying, wow, this is great. You know, this is my chance to maybe drive only 10 or 15 or 20 minutes and see some good college basketball. So if they start off well, I can see where that place gets 8,000, 9,000, 10,000 people for some of these games. And, you know, Walter Ryan is only 81-17. So I'm sure there will be way, way fewer students there, and that's going to hurt the atmosphere. But, you know, if they're playing well and some of these attractive Big Ten teams come in, probably going to have some good atmospheres.
I've followed the construction a little bit through the Northwestern Twitter account, the men's basketball Twitter account at Welsh Ryan. It looks like they are completely gutting the place. Is that accurate to say that it's going to be a totally different place when we're able to finally step foot back in there to watch some basketball?
Oh, thank God. Yeah, absolutely. I certainly hope so. You know, what won't change is that it's going to be intimate. They're not making it bigger. They're actually making it smaller. So 8,117 seats probably becomes 7,200. You know, the concept now that pretty much every football and basketball program is fighting is getting people to show up. I mean, obviously, you know, people are still going to make it to Kentucky and Louisville basketball and, you know, Penn State and Ohio State football. But so many places now are struggling. So they want to make the building smaller and, you know, give fans a really good experience and great food and Wi-Fi and nice bathrooms, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, the place totally needs to be gutted. It had been, you know, largely ignored for decades. They did add video boards, which helped. But until the video boards came in, the place looked like it was, you know, hadn't changed from about 1985 to 2013. So it got decent. It really does have a good atmosphere when it's sold out because it's packed and because it's tight. And that part's not going to change.
One thing for those that don't follow Teddy's work that I think he does a terrific job is covering the, you know, the pulse of the Big Ten in general, because, you know, the Big Ten's based out of Chicago. He talks a lot with Commissioner Delaney on different topics. And I think one of the things this year that a lot of fans are looking to see how it goes is the move of the Big Ten tournament to New York City, and how that kind of, obviously the schedule is going to be changed, compacted a lot. And this move, my understanding is it was made just to get the Big Ten tournament in Madison Square Garden. Do you think this is a one-time thing to MSG, and how do you think MSG and the New York market will embrace the Big Ten tournament?
You know, I'm from Manhattan, so I'm totally biased. Yeah. I love having events in New York, especially Madison Square Garden. I'm certainly in the minority. You know, most people like the way things are. That tournament rotates between Chicago and Indianapolis. You know, when it's in Indy, obviously it's the biggest thing in town. Great arena. Everyone can walk there. All good, you know, convenient for so many of the schools, you know, so many of the fan bases. When it's in Chicago, you know, it gets the element of, okay, this is kind of big time. You know, they're playing where the Bulls play, better restaurants, but, you know, certainly less convenient for the fans who are staying downtown. Now, you know, last year was in D.C., and some of the crowds were down, as expected. And it was also hurt by the fact that Maryland didn't win a game. So that definitely sucked the life out of it. This year, Madison Square Garden, the goofy part is, yeah, it's going to be a week earlier than the Big East tournament. So all these schools, everyone has to adjust to, you know, not playing basketball then for 10, 12 days before the NCAA tournament. That's going to be weird. I would imagine it'll be sold out just because you really do have a lot of alums there from all these schools. But maybe that's being overly optimistic. I mean, I don't think a lot of, you know, Rutgers fans are going to come. I mean, they probably need Maryland to have a good year. To get them jazzed up. I guess Michigan will have some good fans there. So Jim Delaney loves getting into big cities, loves the East Coast. He's from New Jersey, loves the New York market, kind of like how ESPN's College Game Day is going to New York City. So that's the idea. I do think it really is just one time, at least for now. I could see, you know, in the future, in a cycle of 10 years, maybe it's 8 years, Chicago and Indy, and 1 or 2 years East Coast or Detroit or Minneapolis. So you know, they're not afraid to move this thing around, and but they'll only move it back, I think, if it does well.
What did you think of last year in D.C.? I was there. I'm pretty sure you were there as well. To me, it seemed a little bit sterile based on kind of what we've, in terms of the atmosphere, based on what we've experienced in previous years in Indy and Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Northwestern Maryland game was unbelievable. Maryland basketball fans are a nasty, loud bunch, and that atmosphere was incredible. But once, you know, basically the home team gets knocked out, there's a lack of interest. So, you know, sure, if you're a Wisconsin fan, you're probably not going to D.C. that weekend because it's extremely expensive, and a lot of those games are played during the week. So it was certainly lacking some. I also think that, but honestly, you know, when it's at the United Center, a lot of those games lack atmosphere as well because it's such a huge gym. So I thought it was worth it to try it. I enjoyed being in D.C., but it's easy for me to say I was on an expense account.
Exactly. Last question, and we'll get you out of here, Teddy. But Chris Collins obviously had just a great year last year from a coaching perspective. You know, great accomplishment to take Northwestern to the NCAA tournament. I think the thing that people wonder about him long term is he a guy that's going to stay, in your opinion, at Northwestern for the long haul, or will he? You know, is there a chance that he would look at NBA opportunities? Or, and everyone wants to know, obviously, the Duke thing. You know, once Coach K finally steps away, is he going to be a guy that's going to be in the mix for that job, or do you think he's going to be someone that stays at Northwestern for the long haul?
I really think he's a long haul guy here. First of all, the NBA, I don't think holds much interest for him because that was like his dad's thing, and he's expressed that to me. So the college game is his appeal, and he's, you know, just flat out told me, I mean, look, whoever replaces Coach K is going to fail. I mean, it's basically, it's impossible. I mean, if you look at the history of pro sports, college sports, whatever, I mean, the guy who succeeds a legend has like a 10% chance of succeeding himself. So why would somebody put themselves through that? I mean, what he's got at Northwestern now on top of a, you know, 10-year contract is an incredible gym and practice facility that will open next year. Loves the area. You know, is from here. He gets along incredibly well with the AD and the president. He seems to really like recruiting Northwestern style kids. Great salary. Belongs to a nice golf course. I mean, like, why would he leave? As long as they're treating him well and he's being fairly compensated, and he is, he's going to be making north of $3 million a year. What would compel you to go? Now, if Coach K says, Chris, I need you back here after I retire, I suppose anything's possible. I know him, and I just don't think that he's thinking that way. He's thinking, build a program. This is my baby. And what's great about Northwestern, too, as a coach, is if you have a year or two where you're down a little bit, they're not going to fire you. I mean, Pat Fitzgerald went 5-7 back-to-back years. So, you know, it's not the, you know, if he goes to Duke and misses the tournament 1 year, what are they going to do to him?
Right.
So I think he's really smart enough to want to stay.
Well, he is Teddy Greenstein from the Chicago Tribune. You can follow him on Twitter at Teddy Greenstein. Teddy, it was a pleasure to have you on the show. We will hopefully do it again maybe sometime in season when the Hoosiers and the Wildcats are getting ready to do battle. But we appreciate you taking the time to join us. Thank you.
My pleasure, Alex. Be well, buddy.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. We always appreciate you being here. To get more from me and from Alex, visit assemblycall.com and insidethehall.com for complete coverage of Indiana University basketball. If you liked this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend or family member who loves IU basketball as much as you do. You can also support the show by leaving a rating and review on iTunes, which helps us get the word out to more IU fans like yourself. We'll be back next week with another brand new episode. Until then, as always, go Hoosiers!